On the 1st of Muharram 2022, Ammar Naqshbandi gave a lecture on what he termed British Shiaism. In this lecture, Naqshbandi used deceptive tactics, fallacies, and even misinterpretation of the Holy Quran itself in an open and clear attempt to defend an extremist, deviant, sectarian group which operates in the name of Shia Islam, downplay the significance of the Islamic Revolution, and even tried to turn the Shia population within Britain against Imam Khamenei. This attempt was so blatant that he was blasted and pressurized from every direction by the believing Shia Muslims abroad and within the UK itself, who bombarded Naqshbandi and his funders with refutations shared on social media sites, tweets and messages of condemnation exposing his malicious endeavor, and even full speeches expressing anger at what Naqshbandi had done. Comments are blocked, so you can't see the number of people expressing outrage and refuting his claims. Over 100,000 views, but only 2,000 likes, I'm sure it's safe to assume that the dislikes would be glaringly high. And it's no wonder why he looks visibly nervous in subsequent lectures. And he should be nervous. Naqshbandi has shot himself in the foot. Before this lecture, one may have been able to love both Imam Khamenei and also admire the former efforts of Naqshbandi. But after this lecture, Naqshbandi has made glaringly obvious that he is not only a supporter of the deviant Shias, housed and supported by the UK government, but that he is even willing to manipulate the truth in order to try and turn people against Imam Khamenei and the Islamic Revolution. For those perceptive enough, they will know exactly what deceptive games this individual is playing. But still, so that there can be left no doubts about it and it becomes totally clear, let's analyze this in sufficient, if not complete, depth. First of all, what is British Shiaism? Back in 2018, we exposed the figureheads of British Shiaism and expounded upon exactly what British Shiaism is and who its agents are. A few individuals claiming to be Shia Muslims, but whose predominant role is to further the agenda of the British regime. And the adherents of British Shiaism don't necessarily need to be residing in Britain. Just like Zionists don't necessarily need to be residing in Israel. They could be in Britain, in America, in Canada, in India, in Pakistan, or even residing in Iran. They are those who are furthering the agenda of the British regime. Today, the adherents of British Shiaism can be identified clearly through three traits. One, they abuse, slander, and insult the three caliphs, the wives of the Prophet, and the revered figures of the Sunni Muslims publicly in order to incite sectarianism among Muslims. Two, they do not speak out against the crimes of the Taghuti regimes of America, Israel, and the UK. Three, instead, they choose to attack and oppose Imam Khamenei, the Wali Faqih, the Islamic Revolution, and other marjas and esteemed scholars of the Shia world. These individuals are extremely dangerous, and if we do not expose and oppose them, then they threaten to hijack the noble Shia school of thought in Britain and across the world. That's why Imam Khamenei was pointing out these rotten apples that are upsetting the cart. Naqshbandi knew that he himself had become one of these rotten apples. He could have repented and turned back to the right path, but apparently Naqshbandi's ego didn't allow him to do that. Instead, Naqshbandi attempted to put all the apples, the rotten and the good, into one cart, and then condemn the one who pointed out the rotten ones in the first place, i.e. Imam Khamenei.
When Ayatollah Khamenei says that British Shiaism brings about discord or disunity, and repeats this not once, twice, thrice, on a number of occasions, you find the reality is that this could be the case if you're picking a particular individual or two, let's say. But this British Shia community, many of the Shia who live here don't know the history of Shiaism in Britain.
By relegating British Shiaism to the history of Shia Islam itself in Britain, Naqshbandi is trying to make it appear as though Imam Khamenei is not only condemning all the Shias in Britain, but even their history and ancestors. For a good 7 minutes, Naqshbandi talks about nothing except what? The humble beginnings of Shia Islam in the UK.
Many of us don't realize our heritage and our history and the sweat that was there for us to reach where we are.
How the original Shias who first emigrated to the UK used to commemorate Muharram in houses in the 1960s.
1965 till 1973, those were British Shia who held up the flag of Tashayyu. They did not care that they didn't have a big Imam Barga. You don't need an Imam Barga. You can build an Imam Barga in a small house or in your heart.
He names all sorts of roads that only the locals in the UK would be familiar with.
In Blackburn and Cecil Road. For example, in Bradford, Speedwell Road in Birmingham. Balham, Tooting or Wandsworth. Ruth Road.
And then even lists the names of some of the grandparents of the Shia community.
The likes of Ghulam Hussein Marhum. The likes of Ghazanfar Shah. Nabi Shah of Yusuf Mirza, Siraj Hussein had a house in Louisville Road in Tooting.
What he's attempted to do through this is capture the sentiments and emotions of Shia Muslims in the UK. How? Think about it. If somebody mentions the street you grew up on, the road you used to take on your way to school, the uncle's names that you are familiar with, how's it going to make you feel?
Idara Ja'fariya in Tooting was built towards the end of the 1970s.
I was born in St. George's Hospital in the UK. I grew up in Tooting. Idara Ja'fariya on Church Lane was like a second home to me. When I hear these names, it just makes my heart flutter with nostalgia. But those things which form our earliest and fondest memories can also be our greatest weakness. It's precisely this which Naqshbandi is attempting to exploit. Because after throwing all these names out there, what does he ask?
I ask you, that British Shia community, negative or positive? What do you think?
Yeah, like anyone's gonna say that it's negative when you've defined it like that. Naqshbandi has attempted to hijack the term British Shiaism and say that it refers to the entire Shia population in the UK.
Did anyone award Ghulam Hussein? Did anyone award Ghazanfar Shah? Did anyone award Siraj Hussein? Why did no one award the pioneers of British Shiaism?
Okay, first of all, those people, my grandparents' generation, were not the pioneers of the disease of British Shiaism. Rather, they were the pioneers of Shia communities in Britain. They were those sincere Shia Muslims who migrated to the UK, laid the foundations, and brought the Shia community together in the name of Aba Abdullah. But they did not pioneer British Shiaism. British Shiaism is a disease that is much more recent, a twisted version of what that sincere generation strove with their sweat and blood to establish. British Shiaism, in fact, tramples on all the sincere efforts of our predecessors. Secondly, why is Naqshbandi attempting to kindle a fire of emotions within his audience? Why is he trying to ensnare your sentiments? Why is he trying to harness the love that you have for your background and your heritage? Well, when you love something, you will also hate that which attacks it. And who, according to Naqshbandi, has attacked that which you love? None other than Imam Khamenei.
Ayatollah Khamenei was of those who had attacked the British Shia community.
Naqshbandi wants you to believe that Imam Khamenei attacked the entire Shia population in Britain. He wants you to see Imam Khamenei as the enemy. And if you think that Naqshbandi has done this unintentionally, hey, maybe he didn't know the accurate definition of British Shiaism, right? Well, Naqshbandi claims that the statement of Imam Khamenei about British Shiaism was given no context.
And that this particular statement, in the eyes of some, was general, and in the eyes of others, was quite particular. Although the statement itself did not necessarily have a context. Who of the British Shia is the one who's causing discord and tension?
In reality, the context is there. Imam Khamenei very clearly defined that British Shiaism refers to a specific group of individuals that insult and abuse the revered personalities of the Sunnis. He said, when addressing British Shiism, some people feel that in order to prove themselves as Shia, they must resort to insulting and abusing the revered personalities of Sunni Islam and other denominations. But this is unnecessary. It goes against the traditions of our infallible imams. Just like back when Ayatollah Sistani said, regrettably, it has been noticed that some individuals and some groups are working totally contrary to reconciliation by strengthening the divisions and deepening the sectarian disputes among Muslims. Furthermore, Imam Khamenei stated clearly that British Shiism refers to certain media outlets, saying, when you bear witness to certain radio and television channels among the Islamic world that are launched with the purpose to insult the great personalities of other denominations under the title of Shia Islam, it becomes clear that Britain's treasury finances them. This is British-made Shia. Now, do you think that Naqshbandi didn't know this? Au contraire. He knew all too well that he himself has become part of those very corrupt media outlets. Why do you think Naqshbandi in this lecture feels the need to defend his working for Imam Hussein TV?
If I appear on Imam Hussein TV, doesn't mean that I do taqleed of Ayatollah Shirazi.
You see, Naqshbandi knows fully well that British Shiaism largely refers to these particular Shirazis who own Imam Hussein TV. That's why he feels the need to defend his own affiliation to it. And Imam Khamenei has further elaborated the kind of Shia which works with the MI6 of England and the kind of Sunni which is a mercenary of the CIA of America are neither Shia nor Sunni. Both of them are against Islam. Maybe Naqshbandi never read this statement. But then look at how many times he mentions MI6 and CIA in this lecture.
MI6 and CIA. MI6 CIA. Not MI6 CIA. MI6 CIA. By MI6. By MI6. CIA. This was MI6. Nothing to do with MI6, MI5, CIA, CI4.
Now we don't know or care if he's secretly on the payroll of the MI6. We don't know or care if he obediently shows up at the MI6 headquarters, or if he gets called on his personal line by British government agents. Heck, he can go have secret meetings with Tony Blair, for all we care. What our concern is, and has been from the beginning, is the sectarian narrative that he publicly promotes. This is what harms the Muslim community, and this is what is the main problem and issue. And now, this Naqshbandi is deceptively attempting to hijack and distort the term British Shiaism in order to turn the Muslim Shia community against Imam Khamenei. But if you still think that Naqshbandi genuinely didn't know, if you still think that Naqshbandi's inaccurate definition of British Shiaism was just an honest mistake, okay. Then is Naqshbandi going to publicly apologize for this tremendous blunder he has made? Is Naqshbandi going to go back and fix the fitna he has spread? Is he going to publicly revoke his statement that Imam Khamenei attacked the Shia community in Britain? Somehow I doubt Naqshbandi's ego will allow him to do that. No, the reality is that Naqshbandi knew very well that British Shiaism refers to a small group of individuals and not the entire Shia population in the UK. He knew this, and he chose to manipulate the truth in order to deceive you. Otherwise, why do you think Naqshbandi spends a large portion of this lecture defending the deviant Shirazis, who are already established and proven figureheads of British Shiaism? How does he defend them? Using the same strategy. He puts these rotten apples into one cart along with the good apples and says that the Shirazis generally should not be pointed the finger at.
You ask any Shia, he'll say to you, I heard these Shirazis are MI6 CIA, paid by the government, all British agents.
Another straw man argument. Nobody is saying that all those with the name Shirazi are British agents. If that were the case, then even Grand Ayatollah Makarem Shirazi would be included. Shaheed Grand Ayatollah Dast Ghaib Shirazi would be included. There are great individuals with the name Shirazi. What a shame that Ayatollah Mirza Shirazi Bozorg was the one to implement the tobacco ban in order to resist against the British Empire. Yet today we have those with the name Shirazi who have become tools of the British Empire. These such tools include, but are not limited to, Sadiq Shirazi, Mujtaba Shirazi, and Hussein Shirazi. By lumping these deviant Shirazis in with all the other good Shirazis, Naqshbandi is attempting to give them immunity.
Who are therefore the Shirazis? The Shirazis are made up of four brothers. If a person looks at the biographies of Sayyid Muhammad, Sayyid Hassan, Sayyid Sadiq, and Sayyid Mujtaba, the method in the way that they explain Shiaism differs from one to the other. One may be very forthright and even, some argue, volatile in the way he explains Tabarra, for example. Another may be a lot more withdrawn and diplomatic.
Really?
وَكَانْ أَنْذَا الْأَنْوَاعِ الْمُلْحَدِينَ لَا شَكَ اللَّهُمَّ لَعَنِ الْخَامَنِي لَعْنًا وَبِيلًا وعذبه عذابا شديدا أليما محمد تقي بهجة أي كان زنديقا ملحدا كافرا.
According to Naqshbandi, this is simply, some may argue, volatile in the way that they explain Tabarra. Watch how Naqshbandi defends these deviant Shirazis by mixing the truth and the falsehood and leaving out key facts.
Ayatollah Muhammad Shirazi moved to Iran when the Iranian revolution happened. At the beginning, on good terms with Ayatollah al-Khomeini. Then the relationship became sour.
Okay.
Why did the relationship become sour? Firstly, disagreement about Wilayat al-Faqih. Secondly, disagreement about the Iran-Iraq war. Thirdly, disagreement about certain aspects of Azadari. This is where the disagreements are.
That's how Naqshbandi presents it. A totally legitimate academic and jurisprudential disagreement between two ayatollahs. And then he says,
these differences led to the house arrest of Sayyid Muhammad Shirazi.
So the way Naqshbandi presents it, who looks like the bad guy? Imam Khomeini. Who looks like the innocent ayatollah who was punished for his jurisprudential academic disagreements? Muhammad Shirazi. So what's Naqshbandi not telling us? Well, when Iranian men and women were sacrificing their lives to defend their country and Islam against the tyrannical Saddam Hussein, who was being backed by nearly all the major Western powers, Muhammad Shirazi, instead of confronting Saddam Hussein, chose to confront the resistance and Wilayat al-Faqih. He started touting his own opinions about Azadari and creating all sorts of mischief. How does Naqshbandi refer to this individual?
Ayatollah Muhammad Shirazi.
Why is he calling him Ayatollah? Because he needs to legitimize him. Why does he need to legitimize him? Because if Muhammad Shirazi is not a legitimate marja, neither is Sadiq Shirazi. Remember he who must not be named? Sadiq Shirazi? We exposed him before. On his website, he describes Sunni Shia unity as a political scam. He's a clear example of British Shiaism, and Naqshbandi is trying to legitimize him. How? After Muhammad Shirazi passed away, his brother Sadiq Shirazi succeeded him. But hang on a minute, was Muhammad Shirazi an Ayatollah himself? According to Naqshbandi,
Ayatollah Muhammad Shirazi.
According to Ayatollah Khoui, however, no. As we said previously, Sadiq Shirazi is a fake marja. The source of his legitimacy is itself illegitimate. So why is Naqshbandi even referring to them as Ayatollah and trying to present this conflict as though it was based on jurisprudential academic disagreements? Naqshbandi, like so many of these hypocritical scholars, like to hide where they really stand behind a facade of neutrality. And then they'll sneakily throw in the name of a particular scholar, exalt some and degrade others, saying things in a very subtle way in order to push for their own sectarian agenda. And they do this in such a way that the common Shia audience doesn't catch on. How does Naqshbandi refer to Shirazi?
Ayatollah Muhammad Shirazi.
How does he refer to Imam Khomeini?
Ayatollah al-Khomeini.
To the untrained eye, he's being neutral, right? But actually what he's done is exalted the unqualified Shirazi, upgrading him to the level of Ayatollah, and downgraded Imam Khomeini as though this great faqih of Islam was just like the other mujtahids. He wants to say that the rift was just a difference of opinion and that they're both good, they're all going to Jannah. Now we have to get this straight, there was clearly enmity between them. You can either say one side was good or the other side was good, but you can't say they were both right and on haq. In fact, Naqshbandi himself criticized the Sunnis for precisely this mentality, saying that you can't say all the companions are going to Jannah when some of them clearly had enmity and feuds with one another.
Those who say to you, every Sahabi goes to Jannah, reply back to them by saying to them, hold on, if every Sahabi goes to Jannah, can you please explain to me in the first, how many years, in the first 30 years after Rasulullah died, why are there so many feuds between different Sahaba?
And he further extrapolated this for the Shia community.
All of us at Masjid Ali today, all of us, imagine someone says, all of these guys are going to Jannah. So inshallah, all of us are going to Jannah. Within about 30 years, I've had a fight with him, he's had a fight with him, he's had a fight with him. This one's actually not just had a fight, he's actually gone and beheaded him. The other one's poisoned him. And then when people read about us, they're like, subhanallah, all of them will go to Jannah. You'll turn around, you'll be like, oh my God, what type of Jannah is this we're gonna go to?
Subhanallah indeed. Even though Imam Khomeini and Muhammad Shirazi had a clear enmity and feud, Naqshbandi is now using that same mentality, which he himself once refuted, to say that both Imam Khomeini and Muhammad Shirazi are both good apples. And it reached a point where, in order to prove his own deviant opinions, Naqshbandi even misuses the Quran 3 times in this one lecture. The first quote, O you who believe, avoid most of suspicion, for surely suspicion in some cases is a sin, and do not spy. How does Naqshbandi present this?
O you who believe, avoid suspicion for the love of God. If you have suspicions about a scholar's beliefs, either talk to them one-on-one. If not, then don't make judgments, because it could be a sin what you're saying about them.
And this verse doesn't even apply here, because suspicion is when you don't know for sure, when you have no evidence, when you are assuming something about someone. Whereas when it comes to the public words and actions of certain scholars, we're not talking about things that we suspect. We're talking about things that we know as a fact with certainty. The mouthpieces of British Shi'ism have publicly gone against the established position of Imam Khamenei, of Ayatollah Sistani, of Ayatollah Makarem, of Shia Islam. It's not something we have suspicions about, it's fact. It's something we've repetitively seen. There's video evidence of it. Therefore, using this verse in this context is totally fallacious. Isn't it funny how Naqshbandi is trying to say that it's not okay for people to have suspicions about him, but it's somehow okay for him to create suspicions about Imam Khamenei? The second quote is, and do not spy or backbite each other. Would one of you like to eat the flesh of his dead brother? Naqshbandi uses this verse in the same context, basically trying to imply that Islam forbids us from speaking out against the likes of the Shirazi cult and the other corrupted scholars.
And do not backbite one another. Do you like to eat the dead flesh of your brother?
But ghiba, backbiting, is not, as Naqshbandi tries to present it, about that which happens in the public domain. The truth is that if somebody has publicly committed sins, publicly spoken sinful words, it's your duty to speak out against them and warn others about them. In fact, the Holy Quran says, why do the scholars and rabbis not forbid their sinful speech? Naqshbandi is now manipulating the meaning of the Quran in order to defend his own sinful speech and the sinful speeches of his deviant cohorts, and simultaneously condemning those sincere people out there who have spoken up against them. The third verse he misuses is, hold firm the rope of Allah altogether and be not divided.
وَاعْتَصِمُوا Quranic principle, وَاعْتَصِمُوا بِحَبْلِ اللَّهِ جَمِيعًا وَلَا تَفَرُّقُوا. Hold on to the rope of Allah and do not disunite. Wallah, you want call for Shia Sunni unity? First, unite your own Shia with one another.
Subhanallah, even when quoting the verse about Islamic unity, Naqshbandi attempts to frame it in a sectarian and divisive manner. As far as I can see, when Ayatollah Sistani himself quotes this very verse, the context is that Muslims in general should unite. It doesn't matter whether they're Sunni or Shia. He said, "Do you not see how the majority of Muslims today are engaged in self-destruction, where they spend their resources, energy, and wealth on the killing and destruction of each other? Try to put out the trouble and avoid kindling it. Hold firm the rope of Allah altogether and be not divided." If Ayatollah Sistani used this verse in the context of the majority of Muslims, why can't Naqshbandi respect that when he also uses this verse? But no, Naqshbandi has to constantly push this idea of Shia-Shia unity. But guess what? Shias are united. Regardless of which of the honourable, conditions-fulfilling marjas you follow, when were we disunited? And if anything, we should keep working on that. But whenever these deviant individuals speak about Shia-Shia unity, you should know that all they're trying to do is justify and include the deviant extremists like Yasir Habib and Mujtaba Shirazi as being among us. Imagine if a Sunni started to say, "We Sunnis should be united with Takfiri Wahhabi terrorists." No sincere Sunni would ever say such a thing. Why? Because they recognize that Takfiri Wahhabis, i.e. American Sunnism, the likes of ISIS, Daesh terrorists, who are funded and supported by the USA, are in reality not Sunni. They are deviant extremists. In the same way that we expect our Sunni brethren to disassociate themselves from the likes of the Takfiri Wahhabis, we too must disassociate ourselves from British Shiaism. Imam Khamenei warned, "Presently, Muslims are being killed everywhere, ranging from Myanmar to West Africa, Nigeria and other such countries. Some are killed by Boko Haram and some by the hands of Buddhists. And some people add fuel to the fire of such discord. American Sunnism and British Shiaism that turns Muslims against one another are two blades of the same scissors. They are trying to pit Muslims against one another." Similarly, Ayatollah Sistani called on all Muslims to work to overcome sectarian differences and calm the passions which serve only those who want to dominate the Islamic country and control its resources to achieve their aims. Therefore, no sincere Muslim will ever embrace the deviance of American Sunnism or British Shiaism. They are perhaps the biggest curse and disease infiltrating the ranks of the Ummah today. Naqshbandi is doing nothing but trying to justify the existence of these deviant so-called Shias, trying to make this into an akhlaqi issue where we should all be nice and we should all be kind and respectful.
Does he believe in Tawheed? Tick. Nubuwa? Tick. Imama? Tick. Qiyama? Tick. After that, whether you agree with his liberal approach to literature or you agree with his extreme approach, do not say that's wrong. Say I differ with it.
Really? Recently, a gay marriage took place in a Khoja community. According to Naqshbandi's rhetoric, we should still consider them to be the best of believers and have normal relations with them, despite the fact that they have publicly and proudly trampled over an established principle of Islam. Why? Tawheed, tick. Nubuwa, tick. Imama, tick. Qiyama, tick. In America, there was a so-called Shia masjid where they had a picture on the wall, not of Imam Khomeini or Imam Khamenei, not of Ayatollah Khomeini or Ayatollah Sistani, no. The American flag with George W. Bush next to it. A man who has the blood of millions of people on his hands due to the invasion of Iraq. According to Naqshbandi's rhetoric, we shouldn't have any problems with that so-called Shia Islamic Center. Why? Tawheed, tick. Nubuwa, tick. Imama, tick. Qiyama, tick. Well, it's not that simple, I'm sorry to say. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam is saying, "There is a group of people who claim that I am their imam, but by Allah, I am no imam of theirs. May Allah curse them. I am only the imam of those who obey me." Yet, what is Naqshbandi saying? anyone that claims to love Imam Hussein, that's the priority, therefore don't have any problems with them.
But ultimately, does he love Imam Hussein? Yes, he does. If he is a lover of Aba Abdullah, that should come right at the top. Right at the top. I see someone who does taqleed of someone different to me. I ask the question, he loves Aba Abdullah? Yes. You know what? Let's unite me and him on the love of Aba Abdullah.
It might sound nice, but actually what Naqshbandi is telling you is to be blind, to not have foresight and basira. He's saying to accept anyone as long as they claim to love Hussein alayhi salam. That's what Naqshbandi is telling you. Imam Baqir, the fifth Imam alayhi salam, on the other hand, is saying that there's types of so-called Shias. One type trick people in our name. One type are like glass which discloses everything that is inside. And one type are like red gold, which the more it is brandished in the fire, the purer it becomes. Naqshbandi is saying accept all Shias. The Ma'soom Imams, on the other hand, are saying don't. Do not fall for their Shia-Shia unity rhetoric. Because when the mouthpieces of British Shiaism call for Shia-Shia unity, the only thing they're trying to do is justify their own deceitful, malicious, and disuniting narrative. They're trying to bring their own deviant extremism into the folds of mainstream Shia Islam. So when Naqshbandi says things like,
another will turn around to you and say, listen to that speaker, but don't listen to this speaker. Then you get confused. Because you listen, for example, to a scholar speak and you're like, I'm learning from this person, but I've been told that this person is with this side.
You should know that he is trying to snatch away your socio-political basira and foresight. Now more than ever before, UK Muslims and Muslims across the world need to be ideologically aware, and they need to be very selective over whose majlis they attend, because the enemies are working very hard through their infiltrators to deviate the communities. In Iran, these rotten apples are placed under house arrest. In Britain, they are given asylum, they are given funding, they are promoted. Thus, it is referred to as British Shiaism. And being from the UK, we might not like the term British Shiaism, but the unfortunate reality is that while the majority of Shias in the UK are decent, sincere believers, a number of the Shia elites in that society have deviated. That's the truth. And yes, it is very sad for me, as somebody born and raised in the UK, to see that my community is being misled. My sisters, my brothers, my cousins, my aunties, uncles, the community members, my fellow students at universities and madrasas are all sincere believers. But I'm sorry to break it to you, in the UK, our resident alim, though sincere and dedicated to God, is not having more of an impact on the world than this despicable mouthpiece on YouTube. I'm sorry if you didn't realize it, but none of our Shia madrasa teachers in the UK are having more influence on the world than these sectarian channels of the Shirazi cult. I'm sorry, but while the majority of Shias living in the UK are decent, hardworking lovers of the Ahlul Bayt, the ones having the biggest effect on the socio-political stage of the world are these very touts and groupies of British Shiaism. So when Naqshbandi says,
we dissect British Shiaism because this country is virtually becoming the hub of tashayyu. Not in numbers, but in terms of importance.
Yes, it is the hub of tashayyu. Tashayyu Inglisi, i.e. British Shiaism. He's just hoping you won't be able to read between the lines. Always remember this. Every society has both good and bad people, but it's the elites who decide the direction the society will take. If you see that the elites of a society are becoming corrupt, it becomes your duty to stand against them if you care about the destiny of the society at large. But Naqshbandi tries to twist it, presenting the argument that if you have a problem, you should simply get out.
For all of us, that those who come here and say that Shiaism in Britain is all Satan, Britain, Satan, give back your passport, go back. I cannot believe the ones who live here, their kids go to school here, they go to hospitals here, they work here, they have British passports. Britain, Shaitan. Go to Iran. Go live in Iran.
Firstly, I am in Iran. Secondly, you mean to tell me that the British governmental system, which is a system utterly unashamed of its colonial and genocidal racist history, a system which today spends millions of pounds funding Saudi and Zionist terrorists to murder and starve to death countless men, women and children in Yemen and Palestine, not to mention all the heinous crimes throughout the Muslim world, a system which today is supporting the futile war in Ukraine, while in the UK, the British public are struggling to pay gas bills and many are struggling to make ends meet, a system which inside the UK, blithering idiots are promoted while decent candidates are besmirched by the state-controlled media, a system which today is so thoroughly oppressing the British public, destroying the National Health Service, cutting the pay of hard-working nurses and teachers, a system which is snowballing poverty and homelessness, while the filthy rich are only getting richer, trampling on the rights of the lower class, a system where many of the elite class, despite being proven and established child abusers, and even those connected to the royal family are recognized pedophiles, they walk free, yet it's a system which extradited Julian Assange to the great Satan America for no crime other than trying to awaken the masses to the real tyrannies of the governments, a system which claims to be a democracy, and yet if you dare to speak out against the monarchy or the queen, you will be persecuted, a system which claims to give its people freedom of thought, and yet it banned Press TV and RT for the crime of presenting an alternative perspective to the mainstream media. This is only the tip of the iceberg of what the British governmental system is. But you're trying to tell me that if a Muslim exercises his God-given right to call it a satanic system, he's the hypocrite and should leave? Mate, if you're too afraid to call out the British government on all the crimes that it does abroad, then at least have the gall to stand up for the British people against the British government. Because to be Muslim means to stand against oppression wherever you are. وَمَا لَكُمْ لَا تُقَاتِلُونَ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ وَالْمُسْتَضْعَفِينَ مِنَ الرِّجَالِ وَالنِّسَاءِ وَالْوِلْدَانِ. This is our identity. Race, nationality, culture, all of these come second. Islam comes first. But what's bizarre about Nakhchivani, who is himself in reality an Iraqi immigrant to the UK, he seems to be more proud of being British than he is of being a Muslim.
We who settled here went to school proudly, worked proudly, educated proudly. Our kids grow up here proudly. Do we have to agree with everything in the society? Certainly not. In this society, there's sense and there's nonsense as well. But it doesn't mean that I begin to backstab a society that allowed me to have Majlis and Hussein.
This is the argument of the Pharaoh in the Quran. The Pharaoh said, did we not raise you among us as a child and you remained among us for years of your life? In other words, when Prophet Musa alayhi salam went to confront the oppressive regime of the Pharaoh, the Pharaoh said, how dare you backstab me? I raised you. I gave you your food, your shelter, your clothing. I gave you your education, your identity, your culture. Nakhchivani uses the Pharaoh's argument, whereas the example of Musa shows us that even if we are raised under a certain regime, if that regime is oppressive, we should stand against it. And Nakhchivani has again deceptively mixed the two, the society and the system, into one basket. لِمَا تَلْبِسُونَ الْحَقَّ بِالْبَاطِلِ وَتَكْتُمُونَ الْحَقَّ وَأَنْتُمْ تَعْلَمُونَ. He knows all too well that no sincere revolutionary follower of Imam Khamenei would point the finger at the British society and people, but rather at the political system and government. It's the system of Britain which is oppressing the British society and people across the world. By mixing the two, Nakhchivani is actually trying to defend the corrupt and oppressive British system against the people. So tell me, who's the one really backstabbing the society? He claims to follow Ayatollah Sistani.
Personally, for me, I do taqlid of Ayatollah Sistani.
Yet go and see how while Ayatollah Sistani was passing statements to unite both Sunni and Shia, raising the Hashd al-Sha'bi, the popular resistance in Iraq to fight back against ISIS, Naqshbandi was busy backstabbing his efforts by saying that all Sunnis are like ISIS, thereby burning the unity between Sunnis and Shias. While Ayatollah Sistani was passing statements of condemnation for the deal of the century and has always supported Palestine, Naqshbandi was busy backstabbing him by announcing falsely that Palestinians are Nasibis who hate the lovers of the Ahlul Bayt. While Ayatollah Sistani said that the efforts of the Ummah must be combined to win back Jerusalem for the sake of Palestine, Naqshbandi was busy backstabbing the entire Ummah by using the holy pulpit of Imam Hussein alayhi salam to spread the Holocaust narrative used by Zionists to justify the existence of the so-called Jewish state. And if you doubt that Naqshbandi is attempting to turn you against Imam Khamenei and against the Islamic Revolution, then note that after discussing the quaint history of Shiaism in Britain, Naqshbandi raises this question.
Before the revolution in 1979, the Shia, how were they in Britain? The Shia were the best in Britain.
The Shia were the best in Britain. When? Before the Islamic Revolution of 1979. He is clearly insinuating here that if we see that after this point, discord came, disharmony came, if the Shia community in Britain is no longer the best, then it's not because of British Shiaism, it's because of the Islamic Revolution. This is while Naqshbandi knows that in reality, the Islamic Revolution and the blood of the Shuhada breathed life and resuscitated Islam in Iran and across the globe. Even Naqshbandi could not avoid admitting this.
How many of the Khawaja community became religious after 79? Ask your parents and they will say to you, before 1979, there were a lot of things they were quite liberal on. When 1979 came, hijab came, music in some cases was removed, others, and so on and so forth.
Nobody can deny that it's thanks to the Islamic Revolution that we are more prepared today than ever before for the dhuhr and reappearance of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam. Even Naqshbandi cannot deny it. But after admitting this, he glazes over it as though it's something unimportant and something that we should move on from.
A Shi'i is so in love with what took place in 1979 that the worldview of 79 still dominates the household of a Shi'i. There's no moving on.
Move on from what? From defending the rights of the oppressed? Move on from fighting the tyrants and oppressors and Yazidis of today? Move on from combating the Zionist and imperialist agenda? Move on from opposing those who have attacked Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Yemen, and have been conspiring against the world of Islam? Move on from fighting those who destroyed Jannatul Baqi? Move on from establishing Islam in ourselves and in societies across the world? Move on from establishing the wilaya of the deputy of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam? Move on from exposing the hypocrites among Muslims? Move on from what? Islam itself? Move on from 1979. That's what you're proposing, right? How about we move on from the event of Ghadir? How about we move on from the time when Imam Ali alayhi salam's rights were usurped? How about we move on from the usurpation of Fadak? How about we move on from 61 AH when Imam Hussein, the grandson of the Holy Prophet, was massacred in the desert of Karbala? No, you've got it all wrong. This is the lifeline of tashayyu'. This is the lifeline of Islam. These are the decisive events of history that make us what we are today. And the Islamic Revolution is the continuation of that. So why does Naqshbandi attempt to brainwash his audience into trivializing the Islamic Revolution and seeing Imam Khamenei as someone who attacked them? Because the despotic British government and the Zionists know that the strength of Shia Muslims lies in Wilayatul Faqih and Marja'iyya. In order to weaken Shia Islam, they need to cut off Shia Muslims from the centralized leadership of Islam. Thus, we see that Naqshbandi is pushing for a pluralistic approach to the leadership. He repeats,
"In the absence of the 12th Imam, nobody's wrong." But there's no one who's 100% right.
Really? Nobody's wrong? So if somebody says that the Ma'asum Imams are in fact not Ma'asum, they're not wrong? If somebody says that eating babies is halal, that's not wrong? If an Islamic preacher drinks alcohol publicly, you're going to say, oh, it's the era of ghibah. I can't say that you're wrong, but you're also not 100% right. What? Think about how ridiculous this is, and yet he repeats this notion over and over again in a baffling way.
But I can never actually reach a conclusion that that person's 100%. Maybe you're not right. Can't say they're 100% wrong. I will repeat this again. I may not say somebody is right, but they're not 100% wrong. Or they may not be wrong, but they're definitely not 100% right, because only 100% right can be someone chosen by Allah.
All he's doing is creating doubts. In the era of ghibah, do we not have clear-cut principles as per the Quran and Ahlul Bayt to follow? Naqshbandi is only exploiting such doubts that already exist in the minds of youth in order to expand to the wider and more fundamental issues, saying, see, everything is right and nothing is wrong. Through this, Naqshbandi is actually distancing his audience from the reality of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam himself.
There is a plurality of thought amongst ulama, not Islam black and white. The days of Islam black and white have gone many years ago. I'm telling you this from now. There is no way a religion who for 1,000 years or more has been under the guidance of fallibles can remain a religion that's purely black and white.
How far are you willing to go to defend British Shiaism that you will even bring the credibility of the entire religion under question by implying that it's all grey? This plurality and disconnection from the centralized wilaya and divine leadership of Islam is precisely what the colonial British want, so that they can take over the minds of Shia Muslims. Is this something new? No. Just look at the deviant Baha'i movement. That's 5 to 8 million people who might have been Shia today if only they had been connected to the divine Islamic leadership. Look at the Agha Khanis or Ismailis today who follow a totally secular and un-Islamic deviant way. That's a further 12 to 15 million people who might have been Shia today if they had only been connected to the true Islamic leadership. And yet again, it was the British government that established their corrupt leadership in 1866. It is the British system which is the master at creating deviant sects. And today, these such groups have strayed so far from the right path that their beliefs, customs, lifestyle, and practices barely even resemble Islam anymore. We must ask, why is Naqshbandi pushing a narrative of being so proud of being British that it supersedes even the most fundamental of Islamic duties?
Proudly.
Why is he trying to promote Britain as the hub of Shia Islam?
Because this country is virtually becoming the hub of tashayyu.
Think about how audacious that is. Not Mecca, not Medina, not Najaf, not Qom, London, Britain. Instead of focusing on the things which really matter, we focused instead on all the other petty crimes of Naqshbandi. His tattoos, his questionable relationships, his wearing tight clothes on the minbar, his brand name clothing, his talking explicitly about sexual issues on a public platform, his flirtatious and generally un-Islamic mannerisms, his selfies with Namahram, his hot tub parties, his rudeness, his snapping at his own audience and even at children, his plagiarism, his illogical and at times even unacademic argument, his charging extortionate amounts of cash while people in the community can barely afford rent, his unceremonious auctioning of the sacred dust of Karbala. All these things are shameful, and by no means should any public speaker or scholar of Islam engage in such things. But these are not the red lines. The red lines have been highlighted clearly and irrefutably in this backfire and previous backfires. These are the crimes that actually go against the fundamentals of Shia Islam itself, against the established stances of the Wali Faqih and the Fuqaha, which are 1. Sowing discord and disunity, speaking foul and insulting words against Sunnis and their revered figures. 2. Attempting to dissuade his audience from supporting Palestine. 3. Openly showing support for those particular deviant Shirazis and Yasser Habib's Lady of Heaven British Shiaism project. And now 4. Attempting to turn his audience against the Wali Faqih and telling the Shia in the UK the outrageous lie that Imam Khamenei attacked them. These have been thoroughly proven for everyone to see clearly that this individual is undeniably an adherent of British Shiaism. His crimes are not hidden. He has publicly sinned and caused his audience to go astray. Therefore, if we follow Imam Hussein alayhi salam, then we will do nahi anil munkar, forbidding the evil against him. If the believers forbid the evil, and if they exert enough pressure, and if the organizing committees that invite such speakers play a responsible role, the tide can turn. Say to them, you've gone too far. You can still change and come back, however. You can still repent. Naqshbandi, I know you have a very high opinion of yourself.
I know that anything I do spreads quick. But that was crazy. By the way, there could be some people even nodding here. They could have done la'nat on me there, and they're sitting in my majlis now. Hey, come on. Or is it depends on who has the influence to change the masses or open their minds becomes the troublemaker.
But remember this, you will never be as famous or as influential as Shahid Qasim Soleimani, nor will you ever be able to change the masses or open their minds like Sayyid Hashim al-Haydari. You might have some temporary fans, but you will never command as much respect as the Honorable Sheikh Zakzaki. You will never be admired like Sayyid Abdul Malik al-Houthi. And all these such great, sincere and true ulama of our time, and many more, follow, obey, love, and would give their lives for the Wali al-Faqih, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei. And in the words of our dear beloved Sayyid in Lebanon, today we are in the middle of a big battle and our Husseini camp is being besieged by the US and Israel. The Imam of this camp is Imam Khamenei. The center of this camp is the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is our camp, this is our Imam, this is our leader, and this is our Hussein of today. In this battle, there is no room for neutrality. You are either with Hussein or you are with Yazid. The battle is renewed and the confrontation is renewed once again. We tell Netanyahu, the Zionists, and everyone plotting against us. We are a people whose will, determination, certainty, and faith cannot be affected by sieging, hunger, thirst, fear, or war. And when our leader, the Hussein of today, tells us, the night has covered you if you want to escape, we will tell him, by Allah, O our Sayyid and our Imam, if we were to be killed, if we were all to be killed, if we knew that we would be killed, then burnt, then have our ashes scattered in the air, then be resurrected, and if this were done 1,000 times, ma taraknaka ya ibn al-Husayn!